How did you first get involved with the movie?
I was approached by a guy called David Joseph, who's the chairman of Universal Music in the UK. He's a friend of a friend of mine, and he'd been a big fan of a previous movie we'd made called Senna, about the Brazilian racing driver, which was also a documentary. And he just I was editing a romantic comedy, believe it or not, in an editing suite in Soho in central London. And I got a text from David Joseph out of the blue while I was editing, just saying, would you ever consider making a documentary about Amy Winehouse in the same vein as Senna? And without even really thinking about it, I said yes straight away. And if I thought about it a bit more closely, maybe I wouldn't be having this conversation with you now. But I did, and I'm very pleased that I did.
Were you a fan of Amy Winehouse before you were approached?
You know what? I wasn't a massive fan. I mean, I sort of was aware of the talent. But, you know, I think that the horrible tabloidy story kind of just drove, I'm so not a fan of that world. I just can't bear all that stuff. And I think it sort of drove me away from the story, really. You know, so I didn't even really take it on, you know, I didn't really take her on board. I think I had, you know, I clocked her music and I was obviously like, well, that girl's really talented, but I hadn't invested in it, if I'm honest. And so it's been an amazing process of discovery since then. So, you know, it's been great actually, because that's been one of the real benefits of getting down and dirty with the story.
There's so much candid video, a lot of stuff that in this day and age with video cameras are always available, but how did you get access to all of that, especially the earlier stuff in her life?
Some of it we got from the family. Some of it we got from her friends, because, and that was the difficult bit, to be honest with you, because a lot of her really good friends had taken sort of a vow of silence after she died, not to speak to the media in any way, shape, or form, because of the way that she sort of, because of the experiences she was having with the media before she died. And so Amy had to work out who those people were, and then we had to sort of convince them that we were going to make the right sort of movie, because they were very, very skeptical. And nobody really wanted to talk to us, by the way. Her ex-husband didn't want to talk to us. The manager didn't want to talk to us. And all the people that did want to talk to us, we didn't really want to talk to them. So it was a bit of a chicken and egg. And so we basically identified who the key players were and got them in a room, one by one. Over, sometimes it, you know, literally took us 6, 7, 8 months to do this. And then would say to them, we need your help to make this movie. And they said, you need to make the right movie, but I don't want to be involved. And we were like, well, how can we make the right movie if you're not going to help us? And they were like, that's your problem, it's not our problem. So it was very difficult. We did, you know, there were lots of sleepless nights, and we didn't really know how we were going to pull through. But, you know, we did have Senna in our back pocket, this previous movie we'd made. So we were like, come on, we made Senna. It won pretty much every award going. It was a great movie. Well, people said, think it's a great movie. You know, we can be trusted with your friend's story, so please help us. And it was just a war of attrition. We just kind of, you know, we charmingly badgered these people for about 2 years in some cases until they finally came through. And then they would say, okay, I'll help you, but then I don't want to sign a release until I've seen the finished movie, which is the first rule of documentary making. You never do that. But we had to take that leap of faith with people, because there was no way they were going to play ball otherwise. They just weren't, you know, they didn't care enough. But now they're all really pleased they did it. Well, it's not that they didn't care. They were just very, very suspicious, you know.
How many people kind of helped? Because I can't imagine assembling a movie with that and then having to wait to get that release. I mean, what if they said no?
Well, it's just the risk you take. I mean, you know, it's just, we have to back ourselves to get them over the line. We spoke to over 100 people, I think. Well, we did over 100 interviews, that's for sure. And, you know, sometimes we interviewed people 2 or 3 times. And, yeah, it was a very, very labor-intensive process. I mean, that's a labor-intensive process, but also going through all the archive, because obviously, as you may or may not know, we don't have any talking heads in the movie, no voiceover, so the whole thing is a mosaic of archive. And that takes an awful long time to edit together. And we've got a very fast editor who's a genius at doing those movies, probably the best in the world, but, you know, it's still an incredibly mind-bending job to try and make it all out of archive. Because you just can't cut to talking head, or you can't cut a bit of narration to get you out of jail. So it's brutal.
You got some stuff from the family, but especially at the end, the dad, her father, isn't painted in the best light. I mean, by just sort of the facts of the case. Was there any problem there with sort of how he was presented as possibly an enabler?
No, I don't think so. I think he did the best under very difficult circumstances. I mean, I think a lot of people were out of the depth because you're dealing with a very, very complicated situation. But I think, listen, you know, a lot of us have been touched by addiction, and I think a lot of us are out of our depth when it comes to dealing with it. It's a very, very complicated issue, obviously. And I think, you know, it varies from case to case. And, you know, things can always be done differently in hindsight. So I think, you know, it's very difficult. We're trying not to be judgmental in the movie at all. We're trying to present the facts as we saw them from, you know, a very exhaustive research process. And we're just trying to present a balanced account of what we think, you know, actually happened.
One of the things I liked, and this is because I haven't listened to much of her music, and as unique and as talented as she was, it wasn't always easy to understand what she said, but you put the lyrics on screen during her songs. Was that like a controversial thing to do behind the scenes? Did it feel like it was dumbing it down for the audience, for somebody like me who doesn't know the lyrics?
No, I think it's the opposite. I mean, I think it's just, it's a gift really, because when we were basically trying to identify what the movie was and what we were trying to say with the movie, we suddenly realized that the story was all in her song. She was, you know, she was writing from the heart about her life as it happened. So we had this incredible gift really, whereby we could show what she was singing about while we saw the lyrics basically express it. Do you know what I mean? So it was an incredible way to juxtapose the audio and the visual, because you can literally see that, you know, she'll sing about her relationship with Blake unraveling, and we've got footage of that relationship unraveling. So it's a fantastic combination. And I think really, really powerful, because her music is really, really from the soul, from the heart. You know, she's bearing her soul, really just as a way of helping herself. It's almost like she picks up her guitar to self-medicate. It's the way she makes sense of the world. She has to write it out and get it out there. And as she says in the movie, to kind of make something good out of something bad. And that's the kind of technique she uses. And so as a filmmaker, it's a gift, because, you know, we could, you know, as opposed to having some guy, you know, sit in the corner of a studio and tell you what happened, we can show you what happened with her music.
I know, it just, at least from the film, that things reached critical mass in her career and in her problems when she came to America, and like sort of the access to the mega celebrity element in America. Would this have been different if it would have been a wholly American documentary? Do you think it would have had a harder time with that?
I don't know. It's really hard to tell. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, she's an incredibly English character. She's a Londoner through and through. I think it's always interesting when you get, you know, Londoners kind of going to the States and having that culture clash. And, you know, she's a massive fan of all things American, you know, as a lot of us over are. There's a huge mutual admiration, you know, between the two cultures. And, you know, she really, what was interesting, she was really, really into hip-hop, really into jazz, which is the great American art forms, aren't they, of the last 20th century. So she, you know, she, I don't know, I mean, her music is very American in lots of ways. I mean, she's very British, but the American music, you know, based on the girl groups of the 60s, it's very American. So, no, I don't know. I mean, it's a hard question to answer, because there's only one Amy Winehouse. It doesn't really matter where she's from. She could be from Mars, but she's, you know, she's totally unique.
Because you didn't want to put in talking heads and you didn't want to fill in the gaps that way, was there anything that you knew of her story that you couldn't get into the film through archival footage? Is there something that was missing that you wish you could have put in?
Not really. I mean, the challenge with the film in terms of the way we make it is because it's all out of archive, there's a very clear sort of technique used in the film, which is the first half, she's looking down the camera at you all the time. She's literally holding the camera and you're looking and she's talking to you, the audience, directly. And that's pre-fame. Once she becomes famous, she's running away from the camera the whole time. And that was a challenge, because obviously when people do become famous, the last thing they want is for somebody to stick a camera in their face when they're trying to cook the supper, because they've been dealing with it all day with the paparazzi outside. So there wasn't as many home movies for the second half of the story. So it was harder to find the stuff to illustrate what was going on in the second half of the story. But we tried to make a virtue out of that. Because the reality, as I said, was that, you know, she was disengaged and she was running away.
Now, having done something like Exit Through the Gift Shop, obviously would it be fair to say that you're attracted to subject matters that are not traditional?
It's just really, I mean, in a way, you're just looking for kind of really interesting people. I mean, not many people, well, certainly not many modern celebrities sort of warrant this level of examination, I don't think. I mean, a lot of them probably do, because, you know, most people have got a story, haven't they, if you dig deep enough. But no, I mean, you know, she's a really, really interesting, you know, contradictory character. Senna was a very complex guy. But then we've just made a movie about, you know, a very famous soccer player called Cristiano Ronaldo, who plays for Real Madrid. And the movie is a, you know, is a very much more observational year in the life of Cristiano Ronaldo. But even he has got a story to tell, you know, because he's just such an elite sportsman. And you have to work out how somebody can be that dedicated and go through so much sacrifice and pain to stay at the top. So, yeah, I mean, you know, big characters, that's what we're really interested in. Or, you know, or big sort of big situations. We've also made this movie about this, the oldest horse race in the world, which is called the Palio, which takes place twice a year in Siena. And it's just an amazing insight into the kind of Italian psyche. So that's a whole different approach to movie. I mean, that's a sort of cultural movie. But, you know, characters, it's all about good characters with great stories to tell.
Do you think the documentary is an art form that's being lost, or is it getting a resurgence now? Because there always seems to be trends in documentaries. Can you just kind of talk about the path of how documentaries in general are going right now?
I think documentaries are having a golden age. I mean, I think that, I mean, God, in Cannes, when we were selling Amy 2 years ago, I think there were 500 documentaries in the market, which is unbelievable if you think about it. So I think, you know, I mean, a lot of people seem to be really turned on by documentaries these days. And it's really interesting. I think that just the quality of the stuff that's getting made is fascinating. People are really pushing the boundaries. I mean, you look at The Act of Killing, that's an incredibly out there documentary. So people are doing really interesting work. And it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. You know, truth is stranger than fiction. I think, you know, you couldn't, and that's why we do them in this style. You know, when we made Senna, lots of people have tried to make the movie of Ayrton Senna, but, you know, that guy was so special. He was so charismatic. You know, it doesn't matter if it's Johnny Depp or Antonio Banderas or whoever, you know, they couldn't be him because he was just utterly unique. And I think the same with Amy. I mean, they can try and get Lady Gaga to play Amy Winehouse, but, you know, Amy was Amy. And Lady Gaga's amazing as well, obviously. But it's weird when you get one icon playing another. I mean, I thought Will Smith playing Muhammad Ali was great, but he's not Muhammad Ali. You know, there's only one Muhammad Ali.
Do you feel that sort of her life trajectory, was this an inevitable thing? Was she a self-destructive personality, or was this going to happen regardless of where she went in her career, or was she a victim of circumstance?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, she was definitely very self-destructive. There's no doubt about it. You know, I think she kind of, I think fame came too quickly for her. She'd never had time to recalibrate and grow up and calm down, you know, because it happened so early for her. She couldn't take a pause for breath and kind of rebalance herself, unfortunately. And I think, you know, that happens to a lot of people in her situation. And I think the problem is she knew that if she got really big, she was going to run into problems. I don't therefore mean that she knew she was going to die, but I think she knew she was going to get, you know, she was going to struggle with it. And she probably became a much, much bigger star than she ever anticipated. And then, you know, she became very sort of isolated. And I think that for somebody who needed to live life to create and make music and make sense of the world, you know, being unable to leave your house because of the paparazzi and everything else, and just, you know, that's kind of no life or something like that. So very sad sort of way to end it. But I think, I don't know if it's inevitable, but I think once she became a massive star, it was always going to be very tough for her to go back to any sort of normality. And, you know, she said in the movie, if I could give it all back, I would.
Thank you for taking time to talk to me. I know you've got a whole slate of other interviews to do, so I will let you go. But thank you so much.
No, my pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.